This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
It's a new shark season, and we're doing things a little differently here this season as well. Welcome to the New Pucknologists. Checking us out. This is kind of a new deal we're trying this season to, shall we say, change things up a little bit. There is a ridiculous proliferation of podcasts happening, so we're going to flip the script a little bit. We apologize to those of you who really like the audio version. We're going to have some visual elements going on this season, so apologies to those of you listening on your podcast catcher. Hopefully you'll get some of this, but here are the things that happened this summer, so let's catch you up. So I know it's October, but it still feels like summer. So let's talk about something that you might have missed over the course of the summer. Facing severe attendance issues, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays from Major League Baseball floated the idea of becoming the first team to be a two-market team, playing the first part of their season in Tampa and the second half in Montreal. Now, not to be outdone by this, the Arizona Coyotes have floated the idea of being a three-market team, looking at Houston, Kansas City, and Quebec, essentially anywhere not located in Arizona. After the success of the Sharks and Gordon Biersch with their Chum Beer Brew, the Carolina Hurricanes have partnered with R&D Brewing for a Storm Brew beer. Other teams considering hopping on the beer bandwagon include the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are in talks to release a stout called The Broom, which starts off incredibly strong but lacks finish. The Vegas Golden Knights talking about releasing a two-year-old IPA, but they're going to act like it's been around for a few decades. Then we have the Ottawa Senators, who are looking into a recipe that instead of making you talk endlessly after you've had too many, it will actually shut you the hell up, especially when you're in an Uber. The Washington Capitals suspended Yevgeny Kuznetsov 3 games for inappropriate conduct. You'll all remember that last May, a video was posted to Twitter that appeared to show Kuznetsov in a hotel room with several lines of what looked to be cocaine. We reached out to Kuznetsov to get his response to the suspension.
Yes! I like it!
Yeah, so during camp in Toronto, forward Austin Matthews smacked down a dummy during practice, causing some fans to ask, "I thought the Leafs bought Marlowe out." The LA Kings have released the fourth iteration of their logo in the last 10 years. We're projecting to 2028 now, and that logo will be something to behold. Good luck fitting it on a jersey. And now we come to a segment we're calling, wait, what? Following their opening night tilt against the Arizona Coyotes, new Anaheim Ducks coach Dallas Eakin had some peculiar descriptions about his team.
Well, Coach, you start this off on the right foot. What are your impressions from game one?
Well, it's probably not the best game we've played in a little bit. I thought we were a little jittery early, and maybe our arousal rate was a little high.
Wait, what? That might seem like some odd vernacular to use until you realize that this is their new goal sound. And finally, the NHL introduced a lot of new rules for the upcoming NHL season after the refs fouled up so horribly during last season's playoffs. But hey, it's not all bad. At least Vegas got a banner. So, let's talk about the Sharks. During the offseason, the Sharks signed Erik Karlsson and Timo Meier to multi-year extensions, while Kevin LeBanc signed a team-friendly one-year deal for
$1 million.
Also during the offseason for the Sharks, Tomas Hertl got married and did whatever this is. Google has been purchasing a lot of land in San Jose to develop a new office park, particularly close to SAP Center, and we're already noticing some new signage. And with that, I think it's time to bring in the panel and talk about what we've seen in the first week of Sharks hockey. And now we bring in the one and only Ian Reed at Ian Blogs Hockey on the Twitter machine. How are you doing today, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me on. It's good
Absolutely.
To be here.
We've seen, well, a couple weeks of training camp. Sharks played 6 games, went 1-5, have played 3 games so far in the 2019-2020 season. Hasn't gone well yet, going 0-3, but let's talk about the elephant in the room, Evander Kane.
Sounds good.
As you might know, Evander Kane got suspended 3 games for abuse of an official. Let's just go over this for a second. We'll have sure. The video rolling here, but according to the rules, well, let's see here. Evander Kane, and this is the actual announcement from the NHL, San Jose forward Evander Kane has been suspended 3 games without pay for violating Rule 4.4, physical abuse of officials, during NHL preseason game number 105 in Las Vegas on September 29th. Yeah, so the incident occurred at 12:51. Kane was assessed a game misconduct for abuse of the officials and under the terms of the collective bargaining agreement, blah, 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 blah. However, in watching it again, my thoughts were, look, Kane checks England, mm-hmm. but as England recovers, he holds on to Kane's stick, and Kane looks for a call, doesn't get it, so Kane disengages, tries to get back into the play. As England comes over, thrusts his stick into the back of Kane's kind of right hip area, no call for that. Kane then responds by slashing England. Looks like it might have gotten a small hair of the official, who knows. Either way, Kane turns around to try to get back into the play, and the linesman goes over to Kane and essentially takes him down, puts him on the ice. Kane coming up, shoving the officials, what started everything. So my take on this, Ian, is maybe if the official calls one of those first two infractions, it never gets to the third one?
Yeah, I mean, there's that. The linesman can't blow that play dead. And I think the problem with that play for me is there's a lot of blame to go around. I mean, obviously, you have what we saw on the camera, which was obviously the altercation between the linesman and Kane. But it's not like this is happening in the corner halfway across the ice. This is in the middle of play. Like, the puck is there. It's not like this is, you know, there's two referees on the ice. So why this play doesn't get blown dead sooner? Like, I understand what the linesman's trying to do. He's trying to control a game that's quickly, at this point, spiraling out of control. So I can kind of understand where the linesman's coming from. I really, in my opinion, the ref let him down because the ref should have blown that play dead. And then, you know, when the linesman's trying to corral Kane, I get it at that point. The play's dead. You don't want, you know, more shenanigans that already happened. This game is quickly spiraling out of control. But unfortunately, in my opinion, yeah, the linesman is too aggressive in that situation, but he's completely left high and dry by the ref.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think if the official just never touches Kane, I don't know that much more comes from it. But, I think it probably all ends there. Was Kane wrong to shove the official? Absolutely. But, yeah. Was the official wrong to go after Kane?
I think if the ref did his job and blows that play dead, then he's managing. That's game management at that point. I can understand that. I don't understand what the linesman's doing. Well, play is still live. That's the part that I don't understand. And I feel like, that's like, I go back to what I said. I feel like, the linesman definitely, the linesman screwed up, but I think the ref really let his linesman down by allowing the play to continue. And the linesmen, they're discombobulated. There's no communication between them.
Yeah. It's funny. I read a little bit of that rule book. What else it says in that rule book, though? A player is not permitted to hold an opponent's stick.
Yeah.
Rule 54.2. Again, the officials hung him out to dry. I think if they make that initial call, none of it gets that far. But the suspension, it's brought up a lot of conversation about the lack of forward depth on the Sharks.
Sure.
Kevin Kurz, and hopefully I can maybe throw this tweet up, but he pointed out earlier that, management made a decision giving Evander Kane all that money. And I, again, to paraphrase, I don't have the tweet in front of me, unfortunately, but essentially said that, you know, that's a decision that the front office is going to have to live with. But when you've scored three goals in three games, depth, you know, forwards, and of course, we predicted this. We saw this coming early on, where it was, if the Sharks struggle early, if Erik Karlsson misses any time whatsoever, yep, his contract is going to come up, and yep, all the things that could have been done with that $11.5 million a year.
Yeah.
So where do you see this going if say the Sharks roll another five games and only are able to average a goal a game?
I mean that's a disaster for the front office, I think. I mean, I think that I'm tired of hearing Peter DeBoer saying this is the most I've had to teach, because that's your job. But at the same time, like, the front office is the people that, you know, gives Peter DeBoer the tools to use. And so far, the tools that he's been given, you know, with all due respect to, you know, Peter DeBoer, we all know how I feel about Peter DeBoer, but given what he's been given to work with, I mean, it's obviously not been optimal. And you can start the argument of, you know, should the coach change to manage the players? But I think it's, you have so many new faces that there was going to be pain to start the season. I think that anyone expected the Sharks to come into the season and rip off a bunch of wins was kind of fooling themselves to begin with. I think, you know, it's going to, obviously it's a little bit of both, right? Peter DeBoer has to figure out how to use what he has, but you do have to look at the front office and say, okay, this forward depth is pretty slim. Like, you know, maybe you don't fault them for the Erik Karlsson, but I mean, at some point you have to go back. I mean, Erik Karlsson's the easy target because it was the last contract signed. But if you look at the contract signed over the last 3 years, that, you know, maybe you go, okay, maybe some of these other contracts are a problem. Like maybe Mark Edward Vlasic, who's really struggled at seven, you know, maybe that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's easy to pile on Karlsson because that was the last one done, but you know, maybe you have to look at the overall construction here and say, yeah, okay, maybe, you know, Karlsson was the icing on the cake, but maybe some of these deals that they signed before aren't going to be worth it for the amount of time that they're signed for.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when it's a contract that it's that big, and mm-hmm, you look at all the things that, you know, had to leave the Sharks in order for that to happen, whether it's Pavelski, Nyquist, Donskoy, Braun, that's a lot. That is a lot. We've said it before. Pavelski, Nyquist, and Donskoy, that's a second line. That's a decent second line on half the teams in the league. And in all likelihood, you could have kept all three of them with, you know, if you don't sign EK65. The Sharks had a goal differential plus 31 last season, but 38 goals were scored by Pavelski. Another 20 contributed from Donskoy and Nyquist. So there's a lot of offense to be found, and if your defense is just nowhere to be found, that goal differential could get really bad really quick.
I mean, it's not off to a great start right now. It's hard because, like, for me, like, I really like Erik Karlsson. I think we're gonna, like, the season we got from Erik Karlsson last year isn't indicative of, I believe, what we're gonna get from Erik Karlsson. It's hard, man. It's hard because with Erik Karlsson being the last one, it's really hard to say, you know, right now it's easy to say, oh, well, that was a complete disaster of a signing. But I mean, it's three games in, right? Like, if Erik Karlsson's healthy all season, some of this stuff is going to sort itself out.
Yeah.
We'd be kidding ourselves if we think like what we've seen the last three games is what we're going to see for the next 20. Like, if we do, then I will eat my words. But I don't think that's going to be the case. You understand? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's going to be some growing pains with this many new faces on the roster. I'm not trying to make excuses for the team. I think those are just facts. Like, you add this many pieces, you subtract this many pieces, there's going to be a little bit of time where there's going to be some adjustment. I mean, some of the big guys, you know, Erik Karlsson aside, like, some of the guys have to do something. Like, the Hurdles, the Coutures, the Thorntons, I mean, these guys that have been here, the Vlasics, the Burns, I mean, these guys got to do something too, right? Like, these guys look like they haven't played together ever. And that's completely ridiculous.
Well, the other thing I think we need to take into consideration too is, you know, yeah, you got some new guys that need to step up, and we'll find out if it's guys like Bergman or your Tankin, perhaps Blickfeld later on at another point, Brodzinski. But let's also consider as well that we still don't have Šimek back, even though he was, he was projected to be there on October 2nd, still looks to be a couple weeks out. Let's find out, as you're saying, you know, let's get 15 games into this and let's see the Sharks go five or six straight where they actually have the bottom, or I shouldn't say the bottom, but the defensive six that they're all hoping for. Burns and Šimek, and I guess it's going to be Carlson and Vlasic, or Carlson and Dylan?
One or the other.
Yeah, and then what, I guess Ferraro with whoever isn't playing with Carlson. I'm not sure.
Pretty much. Yeah, Carlson, Ferraro, Burns, I don't know. Yeah, Burns, Ferraro, I think of the pairs here. Right, left, right.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. So, you know, it's like, boy, Burns and Šimek is an obvious one. I kind of like Carlson more with Dylan. And then I guess that puts Vlasic with Ferraro. I don't care. I don't know. I don't know if the top of my head, if they both shoot off the same side, but at this point, I don't care.
Nope, that's a lefty-righty combo.
Okay, well then, see, there you go. So, but after three games, you know, the Sharks are 0-3, 0-13 on the power play. They've allowed three shorthanded goals while only scoring three goals in three games, and have given up a goal in the first 5 minutes and five of nine periods played. It's early
it's
in
bad.
The season. Huh?
But it's bad.
It's bad. Now, it's early in the season, but you got to be kidding yourself for some Sharks fans, if they didn't expect to hear something like this after they put this up after three games. Yeah, you're going to hear about it because it's stuff that we heard last season. It was the power play sucked, and people were calling for Steve Spott's job. There was giving up shorthanded goals. There's, of course, I think it was 28 games last season that Jones gave up a goal in the first 5 minutes of a game. And that's continuing. So I think it's only right that, you know, the fans are going to bring this up, because this is stuff we harped about last season. And so far after three games, and granted only three games, still hasn't been corrected.
No. And, you know, I think Bob Bugner over the course of the season is going to have a really positive effect on this team, but it wasn't like he was just going to walk back in the door, wave some pixie dust around and make this all better and overnight. Right. Like, and, you know, Kurz brought up an interesting, in his article today, he brought up an interesting point, was that a lot of the veterans didn't really play in the preseason. It was a lot of the kids playing for the most part. So, you know, the Sharks, because they wanted to get an extra look at all these guys that they, you know, they wanted to get a look at, they kind of did so at the expense of, you know, a lot of these guys should play better than they are. And I'm not disputing that, but you know, they didn't really get a whole lot of runway in the preseason to really find their chemistry with some new line mates, and for the veterans even. So I don't know. I mean, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, if you're this team right now.
Exactly. So, boy, I mean, you know, how long do you give them? We knew that Vegas had a chip on their shoulder coming in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you knew those two games were going to be insanely difficult. Again, the Sharks they're trying to find, you know, an entire new line. Still trying to figure out Gambrell's game. We've seen LeBanc start on the third line, then go up to the second line, play a little on the first line. So there's a lot of interchanging pieces right now, trying to find, you know, some sort of combination. Especially when you consider how, you know, dismal things are on the right wing. It's just a case of, man, we could be in for a long season if things don't change over the next 10 to 12 games.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's the tough part for, like, when we do After Dark, I think the tough part for us is that we don't really, like, it could be really easy to go out there and just like hammer on the panic button, but we're going to get really repetitive 10 games in if we start now, 13 games in if we start now. Like, you know, I think like last night's show was that was one of the hardest shows I think I had to do for After Dark, because we knew, like, it's like, yes, okay, this is bad, but I don't want to be saying the same things, like, broken record. And that's the danger right now, because it's really hard to, because the Sharks have made it very difficult to find positives to spin. Like, you could look at Martin Jones in game one. Yeah, I thought he played a pretty good game, but he was abysmal in game two. Again, defenseman not helping, but Aaron Dell, you know, didn't need that. Like, the defense didn't really help him yesterday, but he didn't really, you know, do himself any favors either. I mean, it's so hard right now to find a silver lining.
Two solid giveaways by Dell yesterday.
Archer survey, man. Like, that's what I hearken back to, because I haven't seen that many just giveaways in a Sharks jersey since Archer survey was here. Cause that was like, that was just shtick, man. He could mishandle the puck like no other.
Yeah. It's that was the one thing I did love about Nabby, but I don't know what Dell was thinking last. Some of these things were just, some of the choices, shall we say, little suspect. Okay, fine. Let's give it, you know, the month of October to see what they can figure out and reassess come Halloween. Sure, fine, whatever. Let's move on to the next topic here. Let me ask you this. How long do the San Jose Sharks have to pay for the ineptitude of the officials last playoffs?
Now, forever.
And, of course, the reason why I ask that is there's a lot of stuff being let go against the Sharks. Game one hurdle was boarded. Later tripped, all on the same shift, no call. The game, I believe it was game two, Gambrell is boarded, no call. Now, in last night's game, as you were talking about, Sorensen flying down, tripped by John Gibson, goes really bad into the boards, off to the dressing room. None of these were called. Now, I'm not going to go full homer. I did point out on the Teal Town USA Twitter that Brendan Dillon got away with the boarding in one of those games. So, I'm trying to look for it on both sides, but
sure,
I am seeing a lot of stuff that you just sit there and go, how is that not being called?
It's really weird because, like, in the start of the season, like, usually, like, the start of, like, the first 10, 15 games are, like, the ones
tight,
where,
right,
everything gets called, and then by the playoffs, nothing gets called, and that's just kind of, like, the way hockey is. You know, I don't like to go down this rabbit hole with the officials, but yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, there was definitely some stuff that I thought should have been called, and I'm surprised. I'm actually just watching around the league. I'm kind of surprised at how wide open the game kind of is as far as, like, the liberties being taken by some teams penalty wise. But yeah, definitely. I'm not going to sit here and deny that the Sharks definitely have benefited, been victimized by some non-calls for sure.
Yeah, but again the way I just throw this back, that, well, you know, does it really matter if you can't score on the power play?
No. At this point I would decline power plays, because chances are you're going to give up a goal, so just decline.
And maybe we can start a pool to find out what game it is that the Sharks will play where either a goal is not given up in the first 5 minutes of a period, or Jones or Dell, either one, I don't care, will crack a 900 save percentage. You know, good times.
Oof.
Good times.
Yeah, that's rough.
Again, stuff that we hearkened and stuff that we harped on last season remains to see if it will be corrected. But the Sharks head off to Nashville, playing on Tuesday. What do you expect to see? I mean, I'm starting to lose. Was Trevor Carrick injured last night? Because it seems like every game the Sharks lose a defenseman.
Yeah, no, I think, I don't recall. I don't believe so.
He didn't have enough time on ice to be injured.
I don't think he got enough time on ice to be injured. I mean, Nashville, man, honestly, I'm expecting more of the same. Like,
right?
I hate myself for saying that, but I think, you know, getting Evander Kane back is going to help, but I mean, unless the veterans, like, to a man are better,
right?
Like, that's where it's got to start. It's got to start at the top. The veterans have to be better. The veterans haven't been good enough, and then it's got to trickle down. I think, you know, a lot of the guys that got glimpses, you know, we've seen positives from them. I think that, You know, Bergman, I think Bergman's been a real, you know, if you want to look for silver linings, I think Bergman's been a real silver lining. I think Ferraro, yeah, he's made some rookie mistakes, but overall, I've really, really liked his game. I think that, you know, he's had a good, I thought Barkley Gaudreau had a good game last night, but I mean, it's got to start at the top. To a man, they've got to be better. The veterans have to show up and start playing Sharks hockey. And so far they haven't.
Well, here's my take on Ferraro, and okay. And I just, you know, I don't know dick about hockey, so I'm just going to throw this out there. my take on Ferraro is, as I look at it, similar to, and unfortunately I got to throw in a baseball thing here, but Brandon Crawford of the San Francisco Giants, he's their shortstop, has been for, you know, nearly a decade, but the kid has stuff that you can't coach. He's just solid defensively. He's got just an amazing range. He's a damn near a vacuum at the shortstop position. And I liken it to, I guess I should say the one thing that he had trouble with when he came into the big leagues was hitting the big league pitch. And it took a while for him to find his swing. Now, that's something you can coach. What he does defensively, you can't coach that. You either have it or you don't. And that's my thing with Ferraro. The kid has got heart and hustle for days. He's got speed. Could he be a scotch bigger? Sure. We all could, right? But the thing is that he's got all the physical talent. I think what he needs, whether it's, you know, the IQ things of knowing what to do situationally, you can coach that. And
oh, absolutely. And look, it's a big jump from college hockey to NHL hockey. Like that jump that he's made, that's a huge jump. So the fact that he's situated himself well, look, and even if he, you know, even if like down the road a little bit, maybe he, you know, comes down a little bit and maybe he's not as good as I think he is right now, like this kid is going to be good. Like this experience he's getting right now is great for him. And even if, let's say 10, 20 games in, you know, the NHL schedule starts to wear him down and, you know, maybe you have to send him back to the Barracuda. That's fine. Honestly, I wouldn't even be upset about it. I think what this guy's shown so far, like you said, there's some things that you can't teach. And I think the things that you can, he's going to pick up because, you know, that's the book on this guy. This guy's a smart hockey player. So I think that, I agree with you 100%. Like there's things that you do that he does that you can't teach. I think, you know, this guy's going to be a Sharks blue liner for years to come. Like this kid's legit.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a full season this season, I am nothing but excited for this guy.
Yeah. No, I look forward 3-4 years from now, even if it takes that long for Ferraro and Merkley to be like just some ridiculous pairing. But
oh yeah, Merkley. I mean, Merkley's a guy who, you know, obviously has got to round out his game, but you know, he's got a little more. Merkley's the thing with Merkley. Like Ferraro has the game right now, and I think like his ceiling's a little bit lower than Merkley. Like if Merkley can find his ceiling in that, that's game breaking potential that Ryan Merkley has. I think Ferraro is going to be just one of these stalwart, you know, two way defensemen that teams want, especially considering, you know, considering, like I said, like he's just, he went from playing college last year to the NHL, and that's a big jump, and it's a hard jump for a lot of players to make.
Yeah. Well, it's been three games, people. 0-3, what are you going to do? Sharks have a little bit of a road trip now, and it's Nashville on Tuesday. Who is it on Thursday? I don't even have the schedule in front of me right now.
I haven't even looked that far ahead because I don't want to know. There's a part of me that just doesn't want to know. I want to be surprised.
Oh, it's not Chicago,
Chicago, yes.
Okay, so Nashville, Chicago, then back home facing Calgary. Like you said, it doesn't get not a whole lot easier on Tuesday. I mean, facing Fleury, then John Gibson. Who do we have next? Oh, Peck. Oh, great.
Yeah.
So, and
Chicago's a team on the upswing.
Exactly. Well, let's be honest. When you're in the basement, you don't have, you know.
Yeah, but I think Chicago is going to surprise a lot of people this year.
Yeah. No, there's some people to, no one's picking them to win the Central, but there's a few that are saying, you know, look, they might not even need the wild card.
That's kind of where I'm at with them.
Yeah. And then you get to face a Calgary team who are, you know, they're pissed off. And, you know, it appears so far that Gaudreau, that everybody can put away the milk cartons, cancel the Amber Alert. He seems to have been found. It remains to be seen. Again, we can all talk about St. Louis and where they were last January and where they finished.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I mean, that's probably an aberration, and I wouldn't put too much stock, but I think it's really early to just really panic.
When is the
this
time
isn't
to panic,
fun to watch.
Ian?
The time to panic, I'm panicking 10, 15 games in. If the Sharks are, you know, have one or two wins under their belt by 15 games, I'm getting worried. And then, you know what, you want to have conversations about firing coaching staff? 15 games in, two wins, I'm right there. Let's have that conversation. I just don't want to have it now because it's too soon. Let's talk about things that are actually going to happen.
Yeah.
And Peter DeBoer is not getting fired five games in. It's just not happening.
Not getting fired five games in, but I will be interested 15 games in.
Right. No, 15 games. If they suck and they're sucking the bottom of the division and, you know, none of this is getting fixed, then yeah, Peter DeBoer's seat gets really hot really quick. I don't care if he just signed that extension.
See, that's the whole thing. 3-12, you know, if they're 3-12 after 15 games, is it on PDB that much after signing an extension? Or do you think that maybe, I don't know, Steve Spott becomes, you know, the sacrificial lamb in this? It's not going to be Bugner just returning. No. And in fact, maybe Bugner is here in case PDB's seat does get flaming hot, ejected, and then you slide in Boogie.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a thought that, you know, it's an easy change that could happen. Although I don't know if not that I have anything against Bob Bugner. I mean, I don't think, you know, you look at what happened with him in Florida. I mean, would that really kick your fan base back into a frenzy and be like, yeah, this is going to fix everything? Like, I don't know. I feel like, and again, we're talking hypothetically 15 games down the road. It's an interesting thought, but I think if you end up in that situation, you probably have to bring in someone. You have to completely turn this thing over, I think.
Yeah.
If you're Doug Wilson, because if you're Doug Wilson at this point, you have to say face, because if this isn't a rebuild season, this isn't a retool season. So if you're Doug Wilson and you fire Peter DeBoer, I can't believe we're talking about this, but hypothetically speaking, you fire Peter DeBoer after 15 games because you're 2-13, the spotlight very quickly goes to you next.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
I give you my final hypothetical and then we're out of here.
I can't believe you got me to do this. I've been fighting it for so long.
Yes. Just because hypotheticals are fun. Let's just fast forward to March.
Okay.
Trade deadline time.
Oof.
Is the end of the week.
Okay.
And the Sharks are clearly out of the play. They're fifth in the division.
Okay.
All right. In the, you know, they're like 10th in the conference. Things are not looking good.
No, not looking good at all. Okay.
If your name is Joe Thornton, are you considering asking for a trade? Are you going to like maybe pull a Ray Bourque?
I wouldn't begrudge him.
No.
I wouldn't fault him for it. Joe Thornton has earned the right to do whatever the hell he wants. If the Sharks are clearly out of the playoffs and, you know, he's looking at the finish line. Godspeed, dude. Godspeed.
Yeah. I think you probably make that move. I mean, especially depending on what, not that I can't imagine that the return would be really big.
No.
Well, the Ray Bourque thing, was that an actual trade with Colorado?
Yep.
Okay, I thought that was a trade. I wasn't sure if it was a different play.
Yeah, he totally mercenaried himself out there.
Yeah. So
I think, yeah, at that point, like, Joe Thornton's earned that, right? Like, in my opinion, Godspeed, man. Good luck, you know?
But
it's not exactly an easy thing to do.
How heartbreaking would it be if it was to Vegas? Mm-hmm.
Oh, why would you even put that out there? Why would you put that in the... Oh,
you know, man. What? For those of you watching, make sure to hit us in the comments below.
Oh, my God. Why would you put that out there?
We're lighting it on fire for the first new show. So,
yeah. Wow, man. That would sting, man. I feel like I would still... Would I be...
How great would it be if he went back to Boston?
Godspeed. You know what? Even if he went to Vegas, I mean, I wouldn't like it. But like, if that got him a Stanley Cup, I'd probably like.
Well, that's the whole thing.
It's harsh,
that's the whole thing. Is how do you resolve that as a fan, where you're like, God, Joe Thornton, you so deserve this. But you know who doesn't deserve a cup in their third year of existence?
I don't like the Golden Knights. I don't hate them as much as a lot of our fan base does. Like, I still hate a lot of our traditional rivals more. Like, I still hate the Kings and Ducks more than I hate the Golden Knights, I think. And maybe it's because I don't get into these little fights on Twitter with them. And maybe if I did, I would hate them more, but I don't really do that in general with any fan base. So I still kind of hate the Kings and Ducks more. I'm not going to lie. Like, if you went to the Kings or Ducks, like, that would be the gut punch for me. Like, that would be like, I can't watch the rest of the playoffs. Godspeed, dude, but I'm not watching it.
I don't think the Kings are going to be.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think the Ducks are going to be either. But like, that would be, I think, for a lot of people, like, having him go to the Golden Knights. Like, for me, it would be him going to the Kings. Like, that would absolutely destroy me.
See, I don't know. I feel like it's the Knights would be the bigger.
Well, right now, because that's like that's the rival, that's the flavor of the month rivalry we have right now, right? Like, because that's current, right? I mean, the Kings and the Ducks, they both are on the downswing, and the Golden Knights are the team that we keep facing in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and that's what they were hoping for when they did all this realignment in the, you know, the playoffs.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think good on them. It's clearly, like, I know a lot of people don't like the playoff format, but it's clearly worked, because there are teams that I absolutely hate that I never thought I would hate this much.
Right.
And the Golden Knights being one of them. Like, when the Golden Knights came in, I was pretty apathetic to the Golden Knights. I think most people would remember that. Like, I was pretty apathetic towards them when they first came in. I was like, yeah, whatever. Okay, good for them, you know.
Yeah.
Good luck. I hope it works out, because they paid $500 million for a team. And, you know, you kind of, I've always rooted for a good story.
Sure. And
no for one... the first year, they were a good story. And, you know, now they annoy me.
Dude, yeah, no, no one wanted to see another Atlanta Thrashers.
Right. You know? Oh, exactly.
No one wanted to see. And that's why those, you know, the rules that were put into place to make them as competitive as absolutely positive or possible.
Right. And even when they drafted their team, like, I remember after the expansion draft, I went and listened to the show that I did after that draft, and I still had them like in the middle of the division.
Yeah.
I didn't have them as a playoff team. Like, there's so much revisionist history around this team too. Like, where it's, oh man, they just made them so awesome out of the gate. No one thought they were that awesome out of the gate. I think a lot of people are doing a lot of revisionist history on this team. Oh, and I
absolutely most go back and you look at all the prognosticators.
Yep.
The vast majority all had them like, you know, hey, first two seasons could be rough, and then you'll find your groove. Just
and then the Cody glasses will show up and things are going to get awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't go to the Stanley Cup final in the first year. Like, nobody had that. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Hit me up on Twitter and tell me how much of a 2020 genius you are. Great. But
well,
don't have that.
And again, I think that's boy, that, you know, that's okay. That honestly, this is the final thing and then we're done. with the deal with Vegas and their success that they've found in the first two seasons, it could end up becoming a double-edged sword. And the only reason why I say this is because you look at the San Jose Sharks when they began, and first year, not good. Second year,
really not good.
You know, absolutely abysmal. But during those first 2 years, It was still Teal fever around here. They were selling out games. People were so happy to have hockey in the Bay Area. And then the third year when they actually moved back, you know, moved into their new home in San Jose, they get out of that crap hole in San Francisco.
The Cow Palace.
But they move into their brand new shiny building and they have a pretty good run. They sneak in as the eighth seed. And then when they knock out Detroit, I mean, it was explosive here. And it came real close to getting to the Western Conference Finals. So
crossbar away.
Yeah. So the whole thing is that it took a while to build that. And but from the get-go, even when they sucked, it was just all the love in the world. Now, fast forward 25 years.
Sure.
You know, see what you want. People become, you know, when you drive a Ferrari every day, you know, maybe by like, I don't know, the third, fourth year of doing it every day, you kind of go, eh, you know.
Yeah.
You become a little bit jaded. And
here's the problem, though. And I hear what you're saying. I get this argument a lot with people because, you know, obviously a lot of people come at me because I'm a big proponent of how they did the experiment. And I'm completely fine with how they're going to do it for Seattle. And you look at, yes, the San Jose were, the Sharks were a success. I mean, the Sharks came in, I was just like, I think I was in grade 9 when the Sharks came into the league. And you know, I remember doing a course, like I think in grade 11, like at like a business course, and like the Sharks were actually one of the units we had to do because they were such a huge marketing success, despite the lack of success on the ice. Like the, you know, the color scheme, the logo. I mean, that's what I mean. I saw a shark biting a stick and I said, that is my team, dude. That is my team. And that's how this whole damn thing started. I'm like, I like that color. I like that logo. This is my team now. Sorry, Montreal. This is my team. And, you know, here I am 20 something years later. The thing is the Sharks, it worked out for the Sharks. The Sharks did okay. And I understand that Sharks fans, we suffered a little bit to get started out. And I understand why Sharks fans are a little bit bitter about that. But then you have to look at what happened after the Sharks came in. You have to look at the Columbus. You have to look at every expansion team, including the Sharks, has had multiple owners. Multiple owners, and a lot of those teams have been around a lot less longer than the Sharks. Especially when you look at your Nashvilles, your Minnesotas, you know, those teams came in how much after the Sharks? Like
nearly a decade,
and you know, multiple ownership changes. Nashville almost moves to Hamilton. You know, the Atlanta Thrashers are now the Winnipeg Jets. Look, that as a business model coming in and sucking wasn't working, and no one was going to pay $500 million to come in and suck for 10 years. And, you know, like, who's going to pay that? Where's your return on investment? Like, sports isn't really a good place to invest your money to begin with as an owner, but like, it wasn't a working business model. And the NHL always catches hell for never figuring things out. They figured out expansion. I mean, you don't have to like it. And I understand that people don't, but they got it right this time.
No, absolutely. I mean, you can't begrudge the way that it's been absolutely successful. Again, the Golden Knights remind me a little bit of the Sharks, like as a franchise, in that they finally gave a city a team that had never had one.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So, of course, everybody is going to lose their mind for a while about it. And again, maybe all that success in the first 2 years, that's all well and good. But we all know that this, you know, the NHL is a life of peaks and valleys. And
absolutely.
We'll see what it's like during the valley times. Who knows when that may be? That could be in 2 years. That could be in 10 years. You never know.
I mean, the game's cyclical, right? Like they're going to have their downs, and then we'll see what happens. But honestly, this team is selling 17,000 seats for a freaking preseason game. They're probably going to be fine. And I know that's going to kill people to hear, but I really think they're going to be fine. Like the only thing that would worry me if I'm a fan in like a Vegas hockey, like the only thing that worries me is if an NBA team rolls in. Like, because I think they're going to be fine when the Raiders roll in, because really it's a Sunday sport versus the rest of the week sport.
Well,
if the NBA rolls in, that's where I get nervous if I'm Bill Foley and the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah. If an NBA franchise comes in, well, see, here's the, again, all right, this is going to be the last time I say this. This is the final thing.
Okay.
The show's going to be 5 hours.
That's what happens when I come on.
Yeah. With the Raiders, First off, yes, it's a Sunday sport, but the thing is, you know, football is king, especially, sure. You know, brings in all the gambling and everything. But the thing is, that's not expansion. It's not like Vegas is getting a whole brand new sparkling shiny team. They're right. getting, you know, a team that is relocated twice in their history already. So, you know, who knows how long. We'll see how long the Raiders stay in Vegas. I mean, you know.
I hope they stay long because, I mean, they're building that beautiful stadium for them with taxpayer money, which they didn't have to do for that hockey arena.
Yeah, so L.A., you know, they were in L.A. for, what, about 12, 13 years and then moved back to Oakland. That didn't work out. Now they're going to be in Vegas. So either way, what I'm saying is when the Raiders put down roots, they don't go very deep. Take, you know, take that into account. Now, if they were to get an NBA team, if they were to get an expansion team versus you know, somebody like, I don't know, the LA Clippers or something relocating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's the same, you know. It's that whole idea of having a brand new team that you can call your own. It's not somebody else's retread.
Yeah, I think the only reason that I'd be concerned about an NBA team is just because you're that point you're kind of competing for that same because it's you know, it's the NBA's schedule is very much like the NHL schedule. Yep. You know, so you're really competing for those ticketing dollars. And I think like a lot of, I honestly, like, I don't, you look in that Vegas arena and, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's just tourists and whatever, but I'm not seeing that. Like I'm seeing a lot of damn sweaters there. And I don't think you're, you know, maybe people do, maybe they like going to Vegas and maybe I've been to Vegas like four times. I love Vegas, but I mean, I wouldn't just go buy a Golden Knights jersey cause I'm in Vegas and why the hell not? Right. Like I don't, there's a lot of people there that are, you know, that team, they've done really well for themselves so far from a marketing and from a ticket standpoint. They're doing really well. I just would get nervous because it's a large area. Don't get me wrong, but you know, you don't want to cannibalize your ticket holder base too much. And I think an NBA team might start eating into that, eating into those tickets.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right. So, we'll be back, at some point. No, I don't know. we'll see if Jerk and or Rocket make the show next week. And if not, Ian, you're free to come on.
All right. Well, I will, let me know. I'm usually doing nothing because that's what I do.
All right. And that's it for the panel, everybody. So that's it, guys. Hope you enjoyed the new show. Hope you enjoy the new format. Either way, leave your comments down below. We'll check it out, get back to you. But we really want to know what you think about the new setup that we're going with this season for our weekly wrap-up show. And with that, I have a final thought. Now, let's all learn to read better and not make assumptions, okay? The Teal Town USA Twitter feed exists generally for the purpose of disseminating information and hopefully providing something humorous, some sort of funny content to give you a laugh from time to time. Now with that, I feel like I need to address something. On the Teal Town USA Twitter feed, I posted this tweet during the Sharks' final preseason game and versus the Knights, of course. But with this tweet, I was merely pointing out that Vegas is still such a new franchise, they were jazzed about setting a preseason attendance record. This wasn't posted sarcastically or with derogatory intent. It was mere just highlighting a graphic that AT&T Sportsnet aired. Now, I posted that tweet because for me, it evoked fond memories. It reminded me of a time when San Jose was a new franchise. Everyone in the South Bay had teal fever, particularly 93-94. Now, after three decades, I'll admit, I've become a bit jaded. That'll happen when you see your team go to the playoffs time and time again. But wow, some of the responses from Vegas fans, and some not even Vegas fans, just NHL fans in general, there were the particularly predictable and uninspired, you know, salty much, and wow, you're so jealous, blah, 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 you know, typical hater. But there are a lot of responses where people were reading into the tweet things that just weren't there. There were a couple that pointed out that the Sharks aren't selling out their preseason games. And that's absolutely correct. But let's make the same comparison. in their third year of existence, I was at sold-out preseason games for the Sharks. So maybe we revisit this topic once the Knights have been in the league for another 25 years. But let's also credit the Vegas franchise. They had a great promotion where they gave out a bobblehead for every single one of their preseason games in an effort to boost sales. Now, I'm not saying at all that that's the reason why they sold out every one of those, but it is fantastic, genius marketing to put out four bobbleheads, one for each game, that when you collect all four, they come together to form, I believe it was Vegas Strong. Either way, fantastic marketing. Again, not saying that's the only reason why they sold out all of their preseason games, but you're kidding yourself if you don't think it had a little bit of an impact, okay? Let's just say there, and just let's resist making all these assumptions, okay? My point is this. There's a Twitter problem because 240 characters of text doesn't allow for nuance and tone. But why always assume the worst? Now, perhaps this speaks to the bitter rivalry between these teams that has evolved over these brief 2 years. Now, that said, if you're going to get the yips and act personally offended by a tweet of all things, at least make sure the tweet is saying what you actually think it is. Make sure it's actually trying to offend you rather than making assumptions because you need something to be pissed off about that day. Like, let's all, to quote Jim Jeffries, let's all do better. Maybe that was a paraphrase. Either way, thanks for checking us out, and we'll see you next week with another brand new Pucknologist.